This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending 15th of March 2024. Hello. And welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle, dated the 14th of March 2024. Your readers today are Tony Bergstrom.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And Jane Rutter.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The main headlines this week are: call to build new hospital in city, shoplifters driven out of Winchester, Cathedral rejects more Austin statue criticism. So we have the story behind the first headline.
Call to build hospital, new hospital in city. Lib Dems oppose plans to close A and E. A new hospital should be built at a former army barracks in Winchester and not in Basingstoke. That's the latest call from Winchester's Lib Dems. A public consultation has been running on the £900 million plans to build a new hospital in Basingstoke at Junction 7 of the M3, which would close the A&E unit at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester. Now, Danny Chambers, Lib Dem parliamentary candidate, says the investment should see the hospital built at St John Moore's Barracks in Littleton, a plan previously put forward. This stance clashes with Conservative candidate Flick Drummond, who supports the NHS plan for a downgrading of the hospital in Winchester, and who says that modern healthcare requires a centralisation of services. Mr Chambers has sent an open letter to the CEO of the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Integral Care Board, Maggie McIsaac, and to Alex Whitfield, CEO of Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust. This comes days before the end of a public consultation on the plans, which ends on Sunday, March the 17th. In the letter, Mr. Chambers calls for the retention of A&E and the consultant-led maternity unit in Winchester, and says there have been very significant and unanticipated changes since the Basingstoke new site had been proposed. These included three potential sites in Winchester becoming available since the hospital analysis work was completed in 2021, one of which is Sir John Moore Barracks near Littleton. Mr. Chambers' letter says this site met your suitability criteria as a location of a new hospital, but was dismissed because at the time it was not available. However, we are now aware that the future of this site is still undecided and it is available. The St John Moore Barracks site has the added advantage of already being government property, saving the many millions of pounds required to buy new land at Dummer near the Junction 7 of the M3. He went on to suggest Bushfield Camp and the Hampshire County Council-owned M3 Highways Contractors Compound opposite, which is also publicly owned. The letter also discussed the plans to rebuild Frimley Park Hospital due to the discovery of faulty concrete, RAAC, in the building. Mr. Chambers said, although Frimley Park is not one of HHFT's sites, creating two very similar facilities in such close proximity seems to make little financial or clinical sense, particularly given the emphasis that your proposals place on resolving the current duplication of services. The Lib Dem hopefuls' view on this matter show that a sharp difference to those held by his main political rival for the Winchester seat, Flick Drummond MP, who has called for the new hospital to be built at Junction 7 of the M3. In a letter written jointly with Dame Maria Miller, the MP for Basingstoke, Mrs. Drummond said, "Thousands of people have already either taken part in the online consultation or attended one of the face-to-face meetings. The documents published alongside the consultation make clear that the status quo simply isn't an option. By building a brand new hospital, we have the perfect opportunity to revolutionize how our health system operates." Dr. Lara Ulloway, Chief Medical Officer, NHS, Hampshire and the Isle of Wight, said, "This is a once-in-a-generation opportunity to invest between £700 and £900 million in the future of hospital services in Hampshire. We are grateful for Danny Chambers' feedback in our public consultation, which we've run over the past 14 weeks. We will be collating and analysing all the feedback, and this will be considered as part of the decision-making process. Meanwhile, volunteers from Save Winchester A&E team were out on the high street in a final push to convince locals to sign the petition. Chantelle Cousins, 42, of Sleepers Hill, launched the campaign to keep an A&E in Winchester more than 2 years ago. The petition is closing in on 20,000 signatures, with more than 19,700 at the time of writing. The 14-week-long consultation ends at midnight on Sunday, March the 17th.
Shoplifters driven out of Winchester. Winchester's senior police officer has hailed the success of tougher action against shoplifting and city centre antisocial behaviour. It has been so successful that many offenders have turned their attentions elsewhere. Southampton is not happy because a lot of our people have gone to Southampton, but it means that they are not in Winchester, said Chief Inspector Corrine Bishop. 10 criminal behaviour orders have been imposed since the autumn, banning offenders from the city centre, she told city councillors. More patrolling, working with other agencies such as the City Council and Trinity, and the use of CBOs, that's the criminal behaviour orders, has helped make the streets more crime-free. A report to the Scrutiny Committee said crime rates in 2023 had dropped by 16.1% against the previous year, and charges and summons were up by 11.4%. Chief Inspector Bishop said reports of shoplifting had increased, whether because of the cost of living crisis or because shops felt more confident in reporting was unclear. Although shoplifting is one of the highest crime types, with 2,312 reported in 2023, police had a positive outcome rate of 42.8%. This is a 239% increase from the previous year. On antisocial behaviour, incidents have fallen from 946 in 2022 to 727 in 2023. In the same period, 754 domestic abuse offences were recorded, compared to 971 in the previous period, showing a reduction of 22.35%. Work had been done to tackle youth-related nuisance, ASB, crime at Chesil Street multi-storey car park, River Park Leisure Centre, and the former Winchester City Council depot at Bar End. The report said work continued throughout 2023, with internal and external partners providing support, intervention and diversion to those identified, to include the issue of acceptable behaviour contracts for some young people. Policing in the Meon Valley is to be beefed up with a 24/7 response team, 10 additional officers to be based in Bishop's Waltham, said Chief Inspector Bishop. But Councillor Caroline Horrill, leader of the Conservative group on the council, said many people in her ward of Watston and Mitchell Dever were disappointed in local policing. She said the reputation of 101 is not good. People feel completely abandoned because the police do not follow up on reports and they feel neglected. They don't report because they don't feel anything happens. She cited one particular problem in her ward but did not identify it in the meeting.
Cathedral rejects more Austin statue criticism. Winchester Cathedral has rejected criticism that its planned Jane Austen statue is cynical cultural misappropriation. The cathedral wants to erect a statue of the famous author in the Inner Close in 2025 to mark the 250th anniversary of her birth in 1775. However, the plans have faced a backlash from the public, with Phil Howe of Hidden Britain Tours saying Basingstoke has better links to the literary figure. In a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, Mr. Howe called the statue, estimated to cost £100,000, unnecessarily extravagant, saying Winchester need not follow Bath's hijacking of the Jane Austen brand with a cynical cultural misappropriation commemorating the work of one of the world's most famous female novelists. The Very Reverend Catherine Ogle, Dean of Winchester, has responded to some of Mr. Howe's comments, saying Austen had strong links to Winchester. She said, "It is well known that Austen was a Hampshire-born woman, and she would have known Winchester and recognised the cathedral close as it remains today. The proposed location of the statue in the Inner Close is close to the route she would have taken when visiting her nephews at the nearby Winchester College and her friends at No. 12, the Close. This route also became her final journey from her College Street lodgings adjacent to Winchester College, the funeral procession to her place of rest in the cathedral. The cathedral has hoped to give Jane Austen a fitting tribute as a sculpture for many years. The opportunity has now arisen with a significant number of private donors and small grant providers keen to see in place the splendid and sensitive design by the acclaimed sculptor Martin Jennings. These funds are restricted by the donors to this project only." Mr. Howe is not the only person to criticise plans for the statue. At a meeting on February the 26th, Austen expert Elizabeth Proudman said, "She was not a Winchester woman, she was a Hampshire woman. She wrote in Chawton and came to Winchester when she was ill and died here. I don't think any statue is appropriate for this part of Winchester Cathedral. The Inner Close is where the monks had a private area. It's a special place. I don't think we want to turn it into Disneyland on Itchen." A previous statue plan was scrapped in 2019 after public feedback.
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with the death announcements. Andrews, Marjorie Andrews, née Harvey, died at home on the 29th of February, aged 89. Burrows, Andrew Burrows, at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on the 8th of February, aged 54. Gosling, Gladys Ethel Gosling, on the 26th of February, aged 101. Harder, James, known as Jim Harder, at home at Chesil Lodge, Winchester, on the 5th of March, aged 82. Jones, Christina, known as Tina Jones, on the 24th of February, aged 89. Maybe, Vivian Jane Maybe, age 74. Mitham, Nora Lillian Mitham, née Armstrong, on the 17th of February, aged 95. Pierce, Christopher David, at Winchester Hospital on the 8th of March, aged 71. Simpson, Elizabeth June, known as Liz Simpson, on the 15th of February, aged 64. Tanner, Irene Lucy Mary Tanner, at Basingstoke Hospital on the 14th of February, aged 90. Thornycroft, Aurea June Thornycroft, on the 13th of February, aged 87. Upton, Stanley Henry George Upton, on the 14th of February, aged 94. Walker, Charles, known as Mike Walker, at home on the 24th of February, aged 92. And now we have Christian comment.
And this Christmas, Christian comment is by Moira Redmond, entitled Forgiveness Can Bring a Little Light. The true crime genre is very popular at the moment in books and TV series, and too often that means gruesome descriptions of violence and making entertainment and puzzles out of others' pain. But there is one true crime book around at the moment, 70x7 by Alex Marr, that tries to tell a difficult and ultimately positive story in a thoughtful and helpful way. It's about Christian forgiveness and redemption. Read on to find out what the title means. The story starts in the 1980s in Indiana in the USA. A group of bored teenage girls attacked Ruth, a Bible teacher, grandmother, widow, in her own home. They killed her, stole a few things, and were quickly caught. A heartbreakingly pointless, sickening crime. One of the girls, Paula, was 15 when she stabbed Ruth and had had an awful childhood. She was tried as an adult and sentenced to death and spent the next 15 years on death row. Eventually, her sentence was commuted. She served nearly 30 years in jail. Paula was a difficult person who didn't always seem to understand what she'd done or how she could think or behave to get over it. This isn't a story of innocence or wrongful conviction, though most people would think it wrong to execute someone for what they did when they were 15. It's not a happy story, though Paula was released eventually and attempted to rebuild her life. At the heart of the book is Bill, Ruth's grandson, a traditional right-wing American working man. Ruth's family had been understandably horrified by what happened and joined the prosecution in calling for the death penalty. But later, Bill had a remarkable moment in which he thought that God and his grandmother were calling for him to forgive Paula. This was life-changing for him. He spent the rest of his days campaigning for those on death row, and he did establish a partial friendship with Paula and with her sister. This doesn't have the perfection of a film script. Bill didn't persuade the rest of his family to forgive, and his marriage ended because of his commitment to the cause. He and Paula did not always have a happy relationship, but his efforts gave him a certain peace, a purpose in life, and something to believe in. He comes over as a difficult but good-hearted man, a man of principle. It is a wrenching book with no easy answers, but it contains goodness and glimpses of hope, and it is told in a fair-minded and unsensationalist way. Forgiveness can be hard. It won't always work, and it won't make everything right. But sometimes it's all we have, and if we don't even try, then the darkness will prevail. Forgiveness can bring a little light to both sides. Jesus is clear on the subject. That title comes from Matthew's Gospel, chapter 18, verses 21 and 22. Then Peter came to him and asked, "Lord, how often should I forgive someone who sins against me? 7 times? "No, not 7 times, Jesus replied, "but 70 times 7. And that was by Moira Redman.
Right, next we have the letters to the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by either telephoning 01962 860836. That's 01962 860836. Emailing letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. That's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23. 8AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. We've got quite a crop of letters this week, 15 in total. The first three are about Jane Austen. Mm-hmm. The next two are about the proposal for the relocation of the hospital. And the other ones are actually all on local topics and things like that. So we'll start off with the first letter now,
which is about Austin's statue, and interestingly it is from Dr. Jessica A. Voltz, who lives in America, and I'll read her full address at the end. "I am writing in response to your recent report highlighting comments about the statue planned to commemorate the 250th anniversary of Jane Austen's birth. As an American who is an ardent Anglophile and author, I was dismayed at the one-sided perspective about a three-dimensional work of art of this magnitude. Recently, Winchester has successfully erected a statue of a woman of whom there are no surviving illustrations, Licorice. Why should it not be applauded for the city to do the same for one of England's and the world's most beloved women authors, especially when we know roughly what she looked like, thanks to a portrait by her sister Cassandra, the one who knew her best? Jane Austen's image has already been borrowed by the likes of the Bank of England and the Royal Mint. Was the authoress consulted about such publicity or visibility? Obviously not, and Britain is all the more in her debt. Martin Jennings's refined design has captured Jane Austen, the woman and the author, in uniquely unified fashion. Her focused gaze gleams with uncommon intelligence and storied wit. She appears every inch the heroine behind novels which have touched the hearts and minds of millions across the world. I remain of the persuasion that a statue of Jane Austen in Winchester Cathedral's inner close is a special and overdue artistic tribute to a national treasure, not the Disneyfication of a place of worship, which will always be a place of pilgrimage for Janeites." And that letter is from Dr. Jessica A. Voltz, North Raleigh Street, Denver, Colorado, USA.
This second letter on the Austen statue is from Andrew Rutter. "I would like to add my voice in support of Elizabeth Proudman, who I think should be given weight in view of her long work about Jane and her life. What I fear is that some financial deal is in place, and the authorities are trying to justify this. If it is felt that a statue is needed outside Church House, How about William Walker and his helmet, so that children learn how his foundation work saved the cathedral? He was a modest man whose unselfish work probably shortened his life, but he is a representative of working-class men. I have heard that there is a good seated sculpture of Jane that could be put in the attractive garden opposite her temporary home in College Street, which one will be able to visit. And that letter is from Andrew Rutter, St John's Road, Winchester.
And the third letter on the statue is from Philip Howe, or B.A. Ons, F-H-E-A-R-S-A, from the Jane Austen Tours in Basingstoke. I note with dismay the news about a Jane Austen sculpture to be erected in the inner close in Winchester Cathedral at a cost of £100,000. It seems unnecessarily extravagant. One junction up the M3 in Basingstoke's marketplace, there's a splendid sculpture by Adam Rowd, unveiled by Jane Austen biographer Claire Tomalin on July 18, 2017. The Right Honourable Maria Miller MP initiated the commissioning for the bicentenary of the author's birth. Jane Austen spent her final weeks in Winchester writing a poem deploring the citizens' gambling habits, and has two memorials to her memory in the cathedral. At the time of her death, she was not recognised as a writer, buried as the daughter of her rector father, and only later was a memorial placed on an adjacent wall acknowledging her as an author. Three memorials seem disproportionate. Winchester has monuments aplenty to satisfy tourists, King Alfred and a dubious Arthurian round table. The Disneyfication of the cathedral's inner close has been rightly deplored by Jane Austen expert Elizabeth Proudman. Winchester need not follow Bath's hijacking of Jane Austen's brand with a cynical cultural misapproportion commemorating the work of one of the world's most famous female novelists. Basingstoke is proud to have created a sculpture commemorating her links with the town where she danced, because it was in North Hampshire where she wrote her early novels and spent her first 25 formative years. If you want to see a fine, fitting, elegant, and modest sculpture of Jane Austen, come to Basingstoke. And that is from Philip Howe, B.A. Ons, from the Jane Austen Tours in Basingstoke.
Sally Penton has written a letter entitled Access Issues. The current discussions about relocating Winchester's hospital services to a field near Dummer do not take into account the immense difficulty patients will have accessing them. Winchester is a transport hub for trains and buses. Routes converge on it from Alsford, Sutton, Scotney, the Worthies, Eastleigh, Stockbridge, Broughton, and even Rumsey. Not one of these services has a destination in Dummer, and many Winchester residents can currently walk to their hospital or hire a taxi. Hospital parking is expensive, so money and CO2 emissions can be saved by retaining a centrally located hospital which can be accessed by public transport. The proposals as they stand will encourage patients to drive. How would splitting maternity services between a midwife unit in Winchester and consultant obstetrician services at Dummer cope with emergency caesarean sections or even planned ones? Florence Portal House offers many wonderful services for women, including gynaecology and the breast unit. One can only imagine the horror of trying to get to Dummer heavily pregnant with toddler or two in tow to be assessed for a procedure by a consultant. Curtailing A&E will save money as 24-hour radiology and anaesthetics can be stood down. But it will be the thin end of the wedge. Once this expertise reduces, the viability of the hospital dwindles. What a brilliant site for first-time millionaire apartments the RHCH will make. And what a lovely view. That's from Sally Penton, Dowlands Road, South Wanston.
This letter from Martin Halfpenny is entitled Armchair Experts. It doesn't matter about the issue. As soon as there's a whiff of change in the Winchester air, those with too much time on their hands and no expertise come to the fore. Be it Silver Hill or Station Approach, too many people fancy themselves armchair experts who largely ignore or constantly disagree with anyone who might actually be qualified. All it does is cause endless delays while the unqualified seem to gain a platform and generate nothing but hot air for years. Now we have almost identical rhetoric coming from more armchair experts who don't like the government building them a brand new £900 million hospital because it's 10 or so minutes up the road. I was amused to see a man described as a writer pontificating on the front page of the Hampshire Chronicle, no less, March the 7th, about how we must have a different consultation on the plans. I assume to fit more with his own expert view that A&E should remain in the city. I'm sure he didn't intend to sound quite so condescending when he described as trying to do their best the actual experts at the NHS front line who work to deliver new hospitals and who might know a thing or two. It's amazing this man and many others think these qualified and experienced senior NHS people haven't really got a clue. Winchester absolutely should have an A&E because, well, it's Winchester. I'm sure they chant at bedtime in the absence of, I suspect, any knowledge about modern and increasingly complex healthcare delivery. If I was the government, I would pull the money so the Luddites who oppose 21st century purpose-built technologically advanced hospitals can die more conveniently at their precious and knackered Royal Hampshire County Hospital after probably entering via its equally knackered and unfit for purpose A&E. And that was from Martin Halfpenny, Green Lane, Monkston in Andover.
This is a letter from Martin Holmes entitled Short Memories. What short memories Conservative councillors Horrell and Godfrey have. Get a bloomin' move on over empty centre, Chronicle February the 29th. It was the Conservative-led administrations from 2011-2012 to the Winchester City Council budget on Central Winchester regeneration and achieved nothing. To use Mr. Godfrey's cricketing analogy, this is not a batting average to be proud of. Councillors Horrell and Godfrey did no better on the proposals for Station Approach that they so enthusiastically backed and spent another 3.9 million of the budget on, and again achieved nothing. As I recall, the latter initiative was, to use a different sporting analogy, kicked into touch following vigorous local opposition. The history of major city council-led development projects in Winchester over the last 14 years gives no cause for confidence. Conservative councillors on the City Council would do us all a favour by accepting their responsibility for a substantial part of this unhappy outcome. And this letter is from Martin Holmes, Culverwell Gardens, Winchester.
Deja vu, writes Joss Creese. I read with deja vu the article in the Chronicle, February the 29th, about Hampshire County Council calling on the government to ensure all residents are connected to high-speed internet services. It reminded me of the ambitions in 2010 of the government's new national broadband strategy, having an inspiration of delivering, quote, the best superfast broadband network in Europe by 2015, unquote. which it still isn't. And in 2014, the leader of Hampshire County Council saying, "It is because of the council's willingness to invest in the next phase of the superfast broadband programme that at least 95% of properties will be able to access superfast broadband services once the project is complete in 2017. And that quote is still on the internet. Today, mobile coverage is as important as broadband, and many parts of our county have no or impoverished services, whether broadband or mobile. In 2024, with growing cuts to public services and infrastructure, is this just one more example of ambition unmatched by any accountability for delivery, even if it offers enormous social, environment and economic value to Hampshire?" That letter is from Joss Crease, Rare Ridge Lane, Bishop's Waltham.
This letter from Nick Edmonds is entitled "Commuters Hit." "Like many rail commuters in Hampshire, I am crestfallen at South Western Railway's radically increased costs for advance tickets, which has come into effect this week. From March the 1st, the cost of an advance return, booked 3 weeks in advance on my usual service, has jumped from £29.50 to £47 a day. This amounts to a staggering, real-life 60% increase, rather than the 5% that South Western advertised. While I've no doubt rail firms will explain this is a requirement as they adjust their business model to the post-COVID world, with delays, track failures, short trains and strike action, this comes as a real hit to the morale of commuters, who already face prices per mile three times that of the average across Europe, and some of the fastest rail fare inflation anywhere in the world. Meanwhile, I was delighted for shareholders of First Group, which owns the majority of South Western, which recently posted profits of £82.1 million and has grown 40% since the start of the calendar year. And there's an editor's note which says that prices quoted are based on Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday, the Mitchell-Dever to Waterloo, 7:33 a.m, and Waterloo to Mitchell-Dever routes, 5:09 p.m. And that letter was from Nick Edmonds, Ringbourne Copse in Barton Stacey.
And this letter is from Sheila Wilson, entitled "Traffic Queries." "There are questions I would like answered about the proposed Bushfield Camp development. It is established that this will generate over 4,000 extra car journeys, with multi-storey car parking for more than 1,000 vehicles. How can the official Bushfield Camp regeneration website state at the end of an FAQ addressing traffic congestion, those parts of Winchester towards the city centre are not significantly affected by the proposals, as most new users that are expected to drive to the site will come from the southern approaches to the city? Surely this contradicts their first FAQ in the proposals. This states that the redevelopment will be capitalising on the site's proximity to the centre of Winchester. Also, what crystal ball are they using? If the first statement is true, then surely they should be looking for a site well south of Winchester to minimise pollution and congestion." And that letter is from Sheila Wilson, Wentworth Grange, Winchester.
"Clock missed," writes James Freeman. "Has anybody noticed that the Guildhall clock has ceased to strike the quarters? It still sounds on the hour, but for some months now, it falls silent from 1 hour to the next. As somebody who has been knocking about in the Broadway for over 60 years, I must say I missed the striking of the quarters. I wonder whether the mechanism has gone wrong or whether this represents some sort of corporate saving to somebody's budget. Let's hope it's only a temporary thing, and we can go back to the good old days when the reassuring sound of the quarter hours being struck sounded up and down the Broadway. That letter is from James Freeman, Highcroft Road, Winchester.
This is a lovely letter from Elizabeth McKenzie entitled Many Thanks. This is a letter of appreciation to a kind woman and one awesome family. On Sunday, March the 3rd, such a beautifully sunny afternoon, I ran with my dog out to Morstead and back to the city, and my car, parked in the park and ride, opened the boot, invited my dog into it, took out my cleaner shoes and closed the boot. Only then did I realise that the clever car had locked itself entirely with the dog and key inside. I had nothing on me at all and a somewhat upset and quite hot dog. May I express here my thanks to the woman who agreed to drive to my home and ask someone there to fetch another key. This was certainly going the extra mile. Since I am writing this letter, I also want to mention a lovely family I saw enjoying a walk together, armed with litter pickers and filling a black bag as they went. Thank you for two great examples of kindness and community spirit. And that's from Elizabeth McKenzie, Thurman Road, Stanmore in Winchester.
And this letter is from Colin Smith, headed Budget Worry. Budget proposals from Hampshire County Council are indeed a huge worry for many thousands of residents. As Michael Newman said, Chronicle Letters, February the 29th, current HCC proposals are shocking. Cutting services on which hundreds of thousands of residents depend is appalling and should not be happening. Your leader that day rightly said the HCC budget cuts are very largely due to vastly reduced central government funding since 2010. HCC has protested to central government and shown how services will be cut unless there's a better funding system for all local government. HCC and central government are led by the same party, which appears to have ignored all calls since 2010 for sensible funding in Hampshire and elsewhere in England. We cannot afford to neglect homeless people or our children with special educational needs, or have our school budgets pared to the bone and every pothole we see and hit in the county's roads is due to inadequate funding available to Hampshire County Council. And that letter is from Colin Smith, St Cross Road, Winchester.
Record year for pancake races. And this letter is from Les Haswell, who is the president of Winchester Rotary. On February the 13th, one of the many days during which it rained all day, 42 teams competed in the Winchester Rotary Pancake Races. The pancake races are now established as an annual event on Shrove Tuesday, and this year saw a record entry of teams from the local community. These were local charities, military, businesses of all kinds, including hotels, supermarkets, estate agents and legal firms, all competing to beat teams of cathedral choir boys and bell ringers. This year's event was sponsored by Gentian, a local retail, commercial and residential property developer, and was watched by around 20 wet but enthusiastic spectators whose encouragement was welcomed by all the teams. The Royal Hotel was the eventual race winner, whilst a team from Tesco won the prize for the best team name, Pirates of the Carrot Bean Isle. And Winchester Round Table was awarded the prize for the best costume. The overall winner on the day was Winchester Hospice, as the event raised just over £2,500 for what is Winchester Rotary's charity of this Rotary year. On behalf of Winchester Rotary, I would like to take this opportunity to thank all the Rotarians who organised the event and others whose support on the day made it the success it undoubtedly was. My thanks also to the Cathedral for once again allowing us the use of the outer close, and to the irrepressible spectators who seemed to enjoy getting wet every bit as much as the competitors. Shrove Tuesday 2025 is March the 4th, and we will be organising our pancake races once again. So get your entry in and your fancy dress costumes out, ready for another enjoyable day. That's from Les Haswell, President, Winchester Rotary.
And this, I think, is the last letter?
No.
No? Not, oh goodness me, there are so many. This one's from Stuart Dios, and it's entitled Pressure Points. I read with a certain degree of incredulity of the response of Blawholmes and the Lawn Tennis Association regarding the development of Manor Park at Pitt, and the inclusion of sporting activities as sweeteners to the city planners for permission for the irrevocable destruction of over half of the area of the existing green space. The response is full of could include, would be, may, etc. Paddle players from South America, somewhat irrelevant. Inclusion of an ice rink, perhaps, as ice hockey is very popular in Canada. I walk past Oliver's Battery Recreation Ground twice a day, where the Parish Council provides free tennis and basketball facilities, for which there seems to be very little appropriate use. The artist's impression of the Lido is hardly more than a domestic swimming pool. Winchester's own Lido closed due to a lack of demand, albeit some years ago. On weekends, when we have a few summer days and visitors abound, the OBRG car park is full with an overspill of on-road parking. No mention of the extensive car parking required, nor usage charges for the proposed sporting facilities. Perhaps public parking on the verges of Badger Farm Road and Romsey Road, or even in front of the expensive houses of the development. More importantly, no mention of the funding for the implementation of the sporting facilities, and a guarantee that this burden will never fall upon the local and city taxpayers. Perhaps previous declarations of the developer included a special needs school. Are there that many prospective pupils within the catchment area that will not require motorised transport to add to the already heavy traffic congestion of this area? What will be the demand that 1,000 new homes will make upon the engineering infrastructure of power, despite the promise of solar installations and ground source heat pumps, gas mains, despite current measures for an embargo, EV charging, media infrastructure, water supplies, rainwater and sewage drainage, perhaps down the hill to Hursley? I imagine Winchester City Council will ignore the obvious multi-million pound per annum benefit of the additional council tax income that 1,000 homes will generate. Any of these questions should also be posed with the nearby Bushfield Camp proposals. And that letter is from Stuart Dios, Partridge Down, Oliver's Battery in Winchester.
And now to our final letter.
Yes, and it is from Mike Sherwood, entitled Wrong Turn. Bankrupt councils, crazy house prices, excessive train fares, failing water authorities, people identifying as cupboards, and even undersized Mars bars. It never used to be like this. Where did it all go wrong? And that's from Mike Sherwood, right close South Wanston.
I think we can all say amen to that.
Yes, indeed.
Right. Next we have the Hampshire Chronicle editorial, and that will be followed by First Person.
And the editorial comment this week is entitled Belated Crackdown on City Centre Crime. Good news about crime in Winchester City Centre came from a recent council meeting. Tough action over the last 6 months has deterred several chronic offenders from committing crime. The new climate is such that they have directed their activities towards Southampton, said Chief Inspector Corrine Bishop at the Scrutiny Committee. The news story has already been read. 10 criminal behaviour orders have been imposed since the autumn, banning offenders from the high street. Crime rates as a whole have dropped by 16% in 2023. Without sounding churlish, this is to be welcomed, but perhaps the stronger action should have been done earlier. This newspaper has reported for some time the repeat offending of a small number of people who live in a small number of hostels. Yes, most of these people have mental health and drug issues, but there comes a point where sympathy should be replaced by an implacable determination to clamp down on these activities. Shoplifting, antisocial behaviour and assaults are not victimless crimes, but harm the quality of life of people who are either the victims or witnesses. It is important that society does not lower standards so such behaviour somehow becomes acceptable, because its perpetrators are classed as vulnerable. An associated question, and one raised in this newspaper by neighbours of one of these hostels in St. Cross, is about the management of these places. Are the managers' expectations of the residents simply too low? Those with long memories will remember state secondary education in the 1970s, when low expectations of pupil behaviour and attainment led to declining standards. One of the reasons why academic results have risen in recent years is that the teaching profession expects more.
And this week's first person is written by Kimberly Barber, the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle, and it's entitled Doubling as a Taxi Driver. I had the pleasure of helping out at a Winchester's Senior Citizens Party last weekend, and what a great day it was. The event attracted more than 100 guests, and there is a full report and pictures in the newspaper. As well as offering my services on the cloakroom, which luckily was not needed much due to the unseasonably fine and dry weather, I also offered to act as a taxi and to pick up some guests. So before the event on Saturday, I collected a very sweet couple from Kingsworthy. I helped them into my car with the lady in the front and the gent in the back, and we set off for Chinabas Village Hall. Making small talk, he asked me what I do for a living, and I said I worked for the Hampshire Chronicle. Sometimes when you work on a local newspaper, you never know what people are going to say. Usually everyone has an opinion about their local rag, and it's not always good. Mainly when we have featured them or one of their relatives in the court roundup. Or perhaps we misspelt their surname in 1977 and they've never got round to forgiving us. Whatever the reason, people usually have a view on what their local newspaper should or shouldn't be doing, and I have learnt to tread carefully when people ask. I hold my breath for what he would say next. Oh, what a wonderful example of a local newspaper, came the reply. Phew, what a relief, a fan. And then he told me about his years spent as a sub-editor and features writer on local newspapers in Wales. How marvellous. Someone who gets it, I thought. Someone who can see the hard work poured into the Chronicle by my team every week. Then he said, so what is it you do there? Feeling that the coast was clear and that I would not be needing my tin hat, stab vest or thick skin, I replied, I am the editor. What came put into perspective all the times I have questioned why I spend so many hours per week slaving away over a new local newspaper. He replied with, well, I'm very honoured indeed. Oh, so sweet. Anyway, we arrived at the party and the rest is history. Bingo, cakes, music, it was packed full of fun. My passengers' kind comments were just one highlight of a wonderful event arranged by Winchester Rotary Club and the Inner Wheel. It was the biggest event since dreaded COVID reared its head and was a great show of community spirit, with volunteers, young and old, making sure everyone had a good time. One lucky raffle winner even went home with a tote bag full of Hampshire Chronicle goodies, including a box of chocolate biscuits and a copy of last week's paper. As I chatted to some of the guests, one lovely lady was clutching a teddy. She'd come from one of the local care homes with the home's activities coordinator. Her chaperone said that she'd been looking forward to the event for weeks, ever since receiving the invite. When I asked her how she felt to be there, she smiled and said, "It's so lovely. I cried when I got here." It was such an emotional moment that something so simple could mean so much. As I dropped my guests home after and helped them out of the car and back in through their door, we swapped contact details. I'm very much looking forward to catching up with them over a cuppa and hearing some tales of local news and adventures, which I am sure anyone who has spent any amount of time in this industry has a few good ones to tell.
Now to the week's announcements. There are a number of What's On items. From Friday the 15th of March until Wednesday the 12th of June at the Ark in Jury Street are on display the Essex House Tapestries, the life story of Julie Cope, a fictional character created by the artist Grayson Perry. On Saturday the 16th of from Saturday the 16th of March through to Monday the 15th of April, there is an eggs extravaganza Easter hunt at the Winchester Science Centre, and we'll be hunting for rabbits and hares there. On Saturday the 23rd of March, Southern Voices will be giving a surround performance of the 40 voice motet Spem in Allium by Thomas Tallis at St Cross at 7:30. And the next day, Sunday the 24th of March, the Winchester Symphony Orchestra Spring Concert is at New Hall at 7 p.m. with music by Gershwin and Shostakovich. And then from Friday the 29th of March through to Sunday the 14th of April, we're still into Easter hunts and things, it's Winchester's Easter Bunny Hop Trail. And details about this can be obtained from, I think, the ARC or the Tourist Office. And then from Friday the 29th of March to Monday the 1st of April, there is an Easter Bunny train on the Watercress line. So we're a bit bunnied out at the moment. And then on Saturday the 30th of March, the Winchester Science Centre celebrates the 50th anniversary of Pink Floyd, The Dark Side of the Moon, with a special screening.
Goodness, that makes me feel old.
And then looking ahead, the Winchester Chamber Music Festival is from Friday the 3rd to the Monday the 6th of May. And the Chesil Theatre, again, quite a little bit in advance, from the 18th to the 25th of May, they'll be presenting a play about the Bronte family. Okay. Sunrise is around 6:15 in the morning, and sunset is around 6:15 in the evening. So we're at that part of the year where some daytime and nighttime are about equal. And I can't remember what the astronomical term for that is. Anyway, it may come to us later. Anyway, if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. That's 01962 861 229, and the number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick.
New 900k tree contract. A new contract to manage Winchester City Council's 30,000 trees will be awarded at the end of the year. The four-year agreement will cost the City Council £900,000 and is due for approval at the next Cabinet meeting on Thursday, March the 14th. Its current contract expires on December the 31st, with the new one starting on January the 1st. In the report to Cabinet, it said, "This framework agreement will cover the Council's tree management responsibilities across parks and open spaces, cemeteries, sports pitches, estate, car parks and housing. The total value of works over the 4 years of the contract is expected to be £400,000. The cost of tree management works will be covered by existing budgets within individual service areas. However, tree management works are reactive by nature. Should existing annual budgets prove insufficient, then a further paper on the provision of the Council's tree management function will be brought back to Cabinet for decision-making, and, if necessary, additional budget provision. The Council is responsible for circa 30,000 trees across its land holdings, including open spaces, car parks, housing and estates lands. Once works to trees have been identified, the Council engages external contractors to undertake the work."
Dogs welcome in cathedral. Winchester Cathedral is now welcoming canine visitors. The change came about following a visit to the cathedral by Sarah Morris last year. She was upset to find she was unable to enter the building accompanied by her Labrador, Daisy. Writing in the Church Times, Ms. Morris said, "Staff on the door were very apologetic. They explained that they did not know why it was the policy, but I was asked to leave the building. When I arrived home, I composed a positive and well-reasoned letter to the Dean of Winchester, the very Reverend Catherine Ogle. I asked whether she would reconsider the policy and allow calm, under control and well-behaved dogs into the cathedral. I was excited to receive a reply a few days later from Dean Ogle saying that she would be working with her management team to create a new dog-friendly policy for a four-month trial period. Ms. Morris and Daisy were later invited back to Winchester Cathedral as guests of Dean Ogle. Other cathedrals across the UK have begun to ease their stance on allowing dog visitors, including Salisbury Cathedral and Canterbury Cathedral. A spokesman for Winchester Cathedral said, "A three-month trial to allow dogs accompany paying visitors into the cathedral began in late October 2023. Since then, 200 or so well-behaved dogs have come into the cathedral during visiting hours, not during services of worship, and the dogs' owners have been delighted and grateful to have received such a warm welcome. Following feedback from staff, volunteers and visitors, it was decided that the trial would become a permanent policy for those buying the annual pass, with guidance to owners to ensure a good experience for everyone, whether dog lovers or not. So owners are asked to keep their pets on a short lead, not to leave them unattended, and to be considerate of others, especially where space is more limited. Dogs are not currently permitted entry to evening events, services, and in the cafe. The cathedral hopes this decision will widen the cathedral's welcome to many more people who want to come and enjoy everything this beautiful, historic building has to offer." And this article is accompanied by a lovely photograph of Daisy the Labrador, who is in the cathedral, and she's wearing a sort of white surplice, and she's done up almost as a sort of chorister, it seems.
Good food and lots of laughter. Afternoon tea was enjoyed against the backdrop of live music by more than 100 senior citizens as a popular party returned to Winchester. The event, the Senior Citizens Party, welcomed people from various groups, clubs, societies and care homes across the district. It had been organised by Winchester's Rotary Club and the Inner Wheel and took place at Itchinabas and Avington Village Hall on Saturday the 9th of March. The get-together is a popular day in the year and has been organised since the 1950s, with only a short break for the pandemic. But things were back to usual on Saturday. As well as music by French singer Muriel and delicious homemade afternoon tea prepared by the Inner Wheel, there was a raffle with donated prizes, bingo and a quiz. Mayor of Winchester Angela Clear stopped by with Mayoress Therese Evans. Councillor Clear said, "I've seen so many people who remember me from last year. It's a lovely event and the food is delicious." Diana Groves, 77, who lives at Tegfield House Care Home, was at the event with the Care Home's Activities Coordinator, Gemma Forbes. She said, "It's lovely, I'm having a great time." Gemma added, "She's been looking forward to this event for weeks." Sam Knight from Kingsworthy was at the event with his wife, Jean. They received the invite through meetings they attend for retired people at St Mary's Church, called Tuesday's Place. He said, "It's a lovely crowd here and it's really nice. It's been a brilliant job by the Rotary and the Inner Wheel." Sonia Utebok, who works at Shawford Springs Care Home in Compton, was there with a group of residents. She said, "It's been really well organised. It's the perfect opportunity for the community to get together. It is nice because the residents get to see people that they haven't seen in a long time." As well as volunteers from Winchester Rotary Club and the Inner Wheel, Charlie Lane and Adil Saad from Rotaract, the Rotary Club's group for young professionals, were pitching in and serving tea. Games, fun, music, good food and lots of laughter were shared by all. Winchester Rotary Club's president, Les Haswell, rounded the day off with thanks to all who helped and attended. He said, "Thanks to everyone for coming. I hope you all enjoyed your afternoon and that you'll be back next year." And there's a lovely two-page spread of photographs showing everybody having a great time, eating some amazing cakes, chatting to the mayor, Angela Clear, and also including the Hampshire Chronicle editor, Kimberly Barber, who helped with a taxi ride and on the day. So a lovely spread of people having fun.
Catapult campaign after river birds attacked. A Winchester man who feeds the swans is urging people to sign a petition to help ban catapults after birds on the Itchen were targeted. Multiple incidents of young people firing at swans in Winchester were reported to police in recent weeks. Robert Truscott witnessed two of the incidents. He first saw a group of children, aged as young as 10, targeting wildlife as well as pupils rowing along the river by Garnier Road. The following day, Mr. Truscott was spat at by a different group of young people after he confronted them about shooting at the swans. The wildlife lover, who's been feeding the swans since the pandemic, said a duck was found dead after the incidents and a swan was wounded. Mr. Truscott, who works as a sculptor, said it was an awful spate of catapult crime and the group of kids were in broad daylight targeting the waterfowl and tried to intimidate me, spitting and threatening as I photographed them. These young kids were being really blatant and chucking stones at students too. There were around 7 different people who reported incidents to the police in the 4 days they were there. And they were left quite... Oh, I'm sorry, that's been crossed off. If we can give police more power to stop and search, that will limit incidents like these. If it's illegal, it will be a lot harder for them to carry around. A spokesman for Hampshire Police said, "We received a report of an incident in which a man reported being spat at by a group of young people near Domnum Road, Winchester, between 4 p.m. and 5 p.m. on Wednesday, February the 21st. Anyone with information on either incident can contact us via 101 or our website, quoting the relevant crime reference number 44 24007110 or 44240075285. Mr. Truscott is promoting a petition to make selling and carrying catapults illegal so police can arrest those carrying weapons in areas of wildlife. The petition, created by Swan Sanctuary volunteer Danny Rogers, has gained more than 8,000 signatures and has until June the 20th to reach its goal of 10,000.
Vets get their teeth into treatment for a tiger. Vets at Marwell Zoo have described the challenge of carrying out root canal work on a 170-kilogram tiger. The team at Marwell had to carry out the treatment after male Amur tiger Bagai broke a tooth. A spokeswoman for the zoo said, "A trip to the dentist isn't anybody's idea of fun. And when you weigh 170 kilograms, have canines that measure 9 centimetres long and a jaw that can deliver more than 1,000 pound force per square inch, is probably a little bit daunting for the dentist too." That's exactly the challenge an all-female team from Marwell Zoo undertook recently when a male Amur tiger Bagai broke a tooth and needed a root canal. Carrie Arnold, animal team leader for carnivores, contacted the zoo's in-house veterinary team after noticing the 11-year-old tiger had broken a tooth. His age and known health conditions made anaesthetising and operating a higher risk procedure, so it was critical everything went to plan. Zoo veterinarian Dr. Elise Summerfield-Smith oversaw the procedure carried out by veterinary dentist Rachel Perry, which involved performing a root canal, removing the dental pulp, sterilising the inside of the tooth and filling it with a sealer. The zoo's team of registered veterinary nurses also monitored the anaesthetic and Bagai's vital statistics. Dr. Summerfield-Smith said, "When we run procedures like this, everyone involved has responsibility for the lives of their colleagues as well as the life of the tiger." The zoo spokeswoman added, "Bagai has since made a full recovery and is enjoying his food once again, thanks to the care, professionalism and expertise of this fantastic all-female team." And there's a photograph of Bagai, the tiger, lying on his side on the floor, being monitored by one of the dental nurses, and you've honestly never seen such a big cat in all your life.
Pygmy goats pair visit to care home. Shawford Springs Care Home was visited by baby pygmy goats Trevor and Arnie from M's Friendly Farm in Durley. The Compton Residential Home, operated by Barchester Healthcare, hosted the furry duo to entertain and offer cuddles to residents. The visit, which took place on Thursday, brought therapeutic animal interaction to the residents who lined the hallways and communal areas to get a glimpse of the tiny guests. General Manager Cassie Munnock said, "Our residents have really enjoyed their unusual visitors today. We knew that having the farm here would be a bit of fun for all our residents, especially as some find it difficult to go on many outings in our minibus. We're always looking for new activities for the residents, and today we have seen the enjoyment and the therapeutic influence animals can have on people." Resident Diane said, "As a child, I used to love all the animals on the nearby farm. Today was very enjoyable." And there's a lovely picture of one of the helpers from the farm holding one of the pygmy goats in their arms, a bit like a child or a cuddly dog, and one of the residents petting it. And it does look very, very cuddly and attractive.
New landlord aims for good old days. A pub in a village near Winchester has been taken over by a new landlord who's hoping to take it back to the good old days. Andrew Gwilym Kent, 30, is the new landlord at the Cricketers Inn in Easton, officially taking over last month after helping to keep the pub open following the sudden departure of the previous landlord in October. The new landlord hosted a party on Saturday, March the 2nd, for locals to meet him. Mr. Gwilym Kent, who previously worked as an operations manager for a bathroom company in Bournemouth, has been overjoyed by the response of the community. He said, "I'm trying to create a community-first, family-friendly pub. A lot of pubs in this area are quite mid to high-end gastro, and we want to be that extension of people's living room, where they can come in any time of day, and that community element is really important to me. I absolutely loved helping out with the pub, so I decided to leave my job and take it on full time. There are no regrets yet. The support people have shown now is mine rather than when the agreement was with somebody else is amazing. We've been busier than I could have ever imagined. The community interaction and having that support has been really empowering. We had the welcome party to see some new faces and build that atmosphere. It was really good, and we were very busy. I'm proud of what I've started to build here. There's been lots of changes here in the past few years, and people coming in have said, it's not been this good since the old days. The pub has been here for 150 years, so I'm very much a custodian. While I'm here, I need to make sure their pub is the very best it can be. The big thing has been adding my personality into the pub and my goals and vision of a warm and welcoming place that's family friendly, with quality food that's an affordable price point. As well as the normal pub customers, Mr. Gwilym Kent has opened the doors to events and gatherings such as business breakfasts and WI lunches. The pub in Easton Lane offers an all-day pizza menu, but is looking to improve its fresh and home-cooked food, offering by hiring a new chef. There are also 3 rooms available to be let. In his time as landlord, Mr. Gwilym Kent has boosted the food hygiene rating from 3 to 5 out of the 5 rating.
Cross-border approach to homes plans needed. Developers who want to build a new town at Micheldever Station are calling for a cross-border approach. The O'Flynn Group is proposing a 6,000-home new town on 1,250 acres of farmland around Micheldever Station. This is close to Popham Airfield, which has been earmarked for 3,000 homes in the latest draft of Basingstoke and Deane Borough Council's local plan. The development is known as Popham Garden Village. Fears have been raised by Micheldever New Town opponents and Winchester City councillors over the impact the 3,000-home Popham development would have on the north of the Winchester district. The O'Flynn Group is also suggesting the land to the south of the A303 junction at Micheldever Station be considered as a potential site for a new hospital for Hampshire. A spokesman for the developer said, "What is needed is a cross-boundary collaboration between the two councils to explore how the excellent existing transport infrastructure at Micheldever Station provides a logical starting point for a new settlement to help meet the housing and employment needs of both planning authorities. Also, with the proposal for major development at Popham Airfield, the case for reopening the consideration of where is the right site for the new NHS hospital is also strong, to site the hospital more centrally between the 3 major turns or indeed towns, sorry, it will serve.
Mystery of dormant roadworks solved. Cross residents have finally received an answer about the mysterious roadworks in place for 2 years in Winchester. Positioned near a pedestrian crossing, the bundle of barriers and signage have restricted access since 2022 to the footpath at the junction of Mead Road and St Cross Road. Concerns were raised about the long-standing obstructions by Richard Chesnell, 81, of Edward Road and former chairman of the Friends of St Cross Hospital. Mr Chesnell said, "The hole in the path has been here for 2 years. It's becoming something of a legend now. This isn't easy for pedestrians or people in pushchairs. They've also placed raised tarmac around the drain, so it isn't clear why the signs and barriers are still on the path. I just wonder if anyone's interested. It seems to me 2 years is a rather long time for this all to still be here." An explanation has now been provided by the road agency in charge of the ongoing work. A spokesperson for Hampshire County Council said, "The barriers and signage at the Mead Road St Cross Road junction in Winchester are in place ahead of planned work to repair a collapsed drainage soakaway. The required repair is complex due to the age and design of the drainage feature, and it has needed detailed investigation by our engineers. The work is scheduled to take place later this month under temporary traffic signals." According to the Hampshire County Council website, the planned works will begin at 9:30 on March the 21st and run until 3 p.m. on the 22nd. The work is listed as a cover replacement, including slabs with concrete lintel underneath for support as necessary. Commuters should be aware that the north and southbound bus stops will need to be suspended and the pedestrian crossing switched off for the duration of the works, and that there will be parking suspension for bays outside the First Place chip shop.
Questions over golf club homes. The developers of a major scheme for South Winchester Golf Club have been questioned about fitting 1,000 homes on half of the site. The Major Parks Master Plan was released last July and shows that 50% of the site will be retained as green space. The question was asked at the latest webinar by Bloor Homes, which was about the scheme's plan for sport and leisure facilities. A viewer called Andrew said, "Beautifully presented as always, like you're doing Winchester a favour. In reality, 1,000 homes are going to be squeezed into 50% of this relatively small site. Currently, it's 100% green and leisure-orientated. How can this be progress?" James Matcham, strategic land director at Bloor Homes, said, "This is a very big site. There's 170 acres. It's massive. We're saying that half of this will be kept as green space, which is pretty good by development standards. I'm confident we can achieve the balance. We appreciate that this will be a significant change for the site, but hopefully it's positive change. The purpose of the sports survey is to identify the local need. Nothing is fixed yet. This is aspirational. We have a pretty unique opportunity. This gives us flexibility." The developer has partnered with the Lawn Tennis Association, LTA, to include tennis and padel courts. Sophie Kerthoys from LTA property team said, "As well as tennis, we're looking to introduce padel courts. Padel is a cross between tennis and squash, and it's huge in South America and Spain. There is a really big pool of people who could be introduced to padel. In Winchester, there aren't a huge number of options for people who don't want to be part of a formal membership structure. This facility won't be a members club, it will be a community facility. Will Gardner, director of the Environmental Dimensions Partnership, said, "The stewardship of nature is at the heart of the proposals. Outdoor spaces will be at the centre of the community. We want this to encourage health and well-being. More than half of the site will be maintained as green space, the majority of which will be habitat creation. It would be good to include a 5-kilometre park run on the site. There will be provisions for allotments or community gardens, also orchards and hedgerows for foraging opportunities."
Meeting debates anger over bus service. Bus passengers in Winchester have been left angry at cancelled and delayed services. Winchester City Council members were disappointed after Stagecoach failed to appear at a meeting to discuss the ongoing problems plaguing the city's services. At the Winchester Town Forum on Monday, March the 11th, councillors reported that residents in the Worthies had complained about the no-notice cancellation of services. Chair of the forum, Councillor Mark Reach, said, "We've invited Stagecoach a couple of times to come along. It's a bit disappointing that they haven't come again. The point is to have an open and collaborative conversation with Stagecoach to understand the issues they face operating a service in a congested city such as ours." Councillor Reach said he was stopped by two residents on Monday because, quote, "the number four was withdrawn from Highcliffe for a week with no prior warning, notification or advertisement," unquote. Councillor Steve Cramoisen from the Worthies ward said, "The spring bus, which is the primary bus that serves Kingsworthy, has been noticeably unreliable, with more cancellations than are comfortable for people to tolerate." A Stagecoach spokesperson said the service was diverted due to a planned closure for roadworks on Petersfield Road between March the 11th and the 13th and apologised to customers for any inconvenience caused. Councillor Cramoisen said he had a very promising meeting with Stagecoach in November and was waiting to hear back from their punctuality meeting, but all communication has stopped. He said people who have moved to the Worthies expected a bus service, with a lot of elderly residents depending on them to get around. Councillor Cramoisen highlighted that the area lacks amenities like shops and a doctor's surgery, so a bus is particularly important. Councillor Kelsey Learney said, "We need to look and see how we can make the buses more reliable, but congestion is the biggest problem." After the meeting, Councillor Cramoisen said, "There are only two buses per hour on the spring service, so if one gets cancelled, you have to wait a while for the next one. Whereas the number five bus runs five times an hour. The number four in Highcliffe has been cancelled for a week when there are only 3 days of roadworks. The next forum will be in June."
Jodie in frame for Art Prize. A former Peter Simmons College pupil is the runner-up in the National Arts Society Student A-Level Art Competition. Jodie Clark's was one of six paintings nominated by the Winchester branch of the Arts Society. Jodie's portrait, Sleeping Figure, secured second place. Jodie said, "I wanted to explore the idea of sleep and its representations of vulnerability and innocence." At the invitation of the president of the Royal Society of British Artists, who was a member of the shortlisting judging panel, Jodie's painting is currently being exhibited at the Mall Galleries in London. Sleeping Figure was also highly commended by the de Laszlo Foundation when it was considered for the Foundation's annual prize for young people's art. Sarah Hill, chair of the Arts Society Winchester, said, "We're delighted for Jodie and her family." Two other Peter Simmons pupils' paintings were shortlisted out of 15 nationally for the first and runner-up prizes from a total of 113 entries. At a ceremony just before Christmas, all six Peter Simmons pupils were presented with framed prints of their art by Sarah Hill. As a runner-up, Jodie wins £250. Jodie has now left Peter Simmons College to study fine art at Arts University, Bournemouth.
Embroidery exhibition brings history to life. An exhibition showcasing embroidery inspired by Chawton House is set to take place this spring. Chawton in Stitches exhibition is to take place at Chawton House from May the 13th, ending on August the 27th. The show has been organised to showcase the works of Emily Barnett, an award-winning graduate from the Royal School of Needlework. Miss Barnett's degree project, inspired by Chawton House, draws its influence from the house's gardens and collection. The orchard influences one panel, portraying the seasonal transformation from blossom to apples. It also includes embroidered text from the Knight family cookbook. Another piece mirrors the rose garden alongside Elizabeth Blackwell's 18th century curious herbal, while the third panel showcases the library terrace adorned with wisteria, naming various women authors, some famous, others almost entirely forgotten. Curator Emma Yardle said, "It's wonderful to be able to display Emily's work, and this exhibition will allow us to celebrate the ways in which Chawton House, once an inspiration for Jane Austen, continues to inspire creative practice amongst a new generation who can draw on the inheritance of the past." The exhibition showcases historic collection items to accompany Miss Barnett's work, including an 1830 sampler stitched by a 10-year-old girl, scrapbooks containing botanical studies, poetry snippets, and manuals advocating feminine accomplishments. Emily Barnett said, "I'm delighted to be able to exhibit my graduate collection at Chawton House." The exhibition is included in the House and Gardens regular admission price. Chawton House operates 7 days a week from 10 a.m. to 4:30 p.m.
And finally, Wing and Prayer for New Cathedral Falcon. Winchester Cathedral's new peregrine falcon has been named. The new female's recent appearance was closely followed by the death of long-standing resident Winnie, and it is thought that the new peregrine may have killed Winnie. Ooh. Now William's new partner has been named Mel. Mel is named after Melusina Trench, dates 1768 to 1827. She was an Irish writer, diarist, poet, and social campaigner whose Latin epitaph is still visible opposite the north transept today. Mel the Falcon was first sighted at the cathedral in February 2024, and since then has been displaying signs of nesting behaviour with William, the established male peregrine. Keith Betton, chairman of Hampshire Ornithological Society, said, "I've known Winnie since she first nested in Winchester in 2011. She was a fantastic mother. She reared five chicks in 2020, and she was an ambassador for her species."
Oh, poor Winnie.
That concludes our extracts for the week. Our thanks to our editors for selecting the extracts this week. to the copying, dispatch and memory team, memory stick preparation teams, and to our readers today, who were Tony Bergstrom.
Goodbye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
And Jane Rutter.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too. Please remember to return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope. And a reminder that you can also hear Winchester Talking Newspaper on AWAS Community Radio 99.8 FM and digital on Saturdays at 5 p.m.